In this episode of the New Money, New Problems podcast, we tell the money story of a friend of mine who has navigated corporate America with skill and grace. Stay tuned for the money story of Danny Andrews.
Let's get some money. From New Money, New Problems, it's the New Money, New Problems podcast, a show for successful professionals searching for the tools they need to navigate financial opportunities and obstacles they've never seen. Negotiating compensation, purchasing your first investment property, helping your family with money, the highs and lows of entrepreneurship. New money brings new problems that require new solutions. Join us as we work through them together. I'm Brenton Harrison, and this is the New Money, New Problems podcast.
Hello, my name is Brenton Harrison, New Money, New Problems, and your host for the New Money, New Problems podcast. I am really excited about this, the first of a two-part series with my friend Danny Andrews. Before I bring him on, I want to talk about why I asked him to join the podcast in the first place. If you've listened to us over the past couple of years, even in the last couple episodes, I've said that when we share money stories, oftentimes we're sharing the story of like an entrepreneur. They're a little easier to schedule. They're people I hang out with more frequently. But we haven't had as much where we both shared the story of people who have navigated corporate America, but also some tips and tools that you can use to do so. So I, in that vein, wanted to have on a friend of mine, Danny Andrews. I'm not going to share too much about his story because that's the whole point of the episode, but I thought he would be the perfect person to not only share his story, but also to do a part two where he can give some tools and tips for those who are trying to navigate life and career in a similar way. So with that grand introduction, Danny Andrews, welcome to the New Money, New Problems podcast.
Hi, thanks, Brenton. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to having a exciting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll build up to kind of what you're doing now. But I would love if you would give our audience some background on training, schooling, like from an early age, what was the kind of the first thing that built you up to the career path that you eventually started?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up on a small island in the Caribbean and left when I was about 10 as a result of a major hurricane. But even, you know, on the island, you know, very humble beginnings, not a lot of, you know, it's paradise for some people, but living there, you know, options are not always bountiful or plentiful. So very early on, it was important for me to try to figure out how to create opportunity for myself and to create opportunity for my family. And one of the ways that I did that was thinking through, like, how do I differentiate myself from the competition, right? This is me at like 9. And so I started taking up singing, and I thought, well, I want to do like classical, like opera singing, right? As opposed to, you know, something that might be more, you know, typical. So I started taking classical vocal lessons. And that is essentially what kind of brought me to the U.S. ultimately, is trying to pursue that dream. Ended up going to some conservatories. And then somewhere along that line or that path, I decided that, well, while I still like the arts, I wanted to choose something that felt a little bit more stable, where I could help my family and start to build wealth. And so I decided to go to college and then to ultimately go to law school. And today I'm an entertainment and tech lawyer.
So it's interesting. You talk about differentiating yourself at 9 years old. You know? So, like, right. What's the thing that can, that can set me apart? Like, my son is 3 years short of 9, and I can almost guarantee that's not in his purview in the next 3 years. Yeah. So what was it about your journey up to 9, or at what point, this would be a better way to ask it, do you start to realize the difference of having money, not having money, stat, what, any of those things? When does that start to come into your field of vision?
So very early on, right? Like, so I didn't have, you know, a lot of resources, you know, growing up. And I would see, you know, there were some interactions with my family and members of my family with like the law, right? And I would see very early on, or I saw very early on, how people who were doing either similar things, you know, or having similar experiences, if they had money or other forms of privilege, that they were getting treated differently, right? And so it was very, that became very clear to me that, you know, having money and access was an important way to really exercise some of the rights, you know, that the Constitution talks about, but doesn't really talk about how to execute on those things. And, you know, so I think like, you know, access to money was one of those really early lessons that I learned that, hey, it's important to have money. Later in my life, I understood how that doesn't necessarily make you happy. But at that stage in my life, it was like, how do we differentiate myself? How do I find a path that gives me access to money and ultimately never lets anyone have any kind of unreasonable amount of like control over what I can and can't do? I grew up a lot with family members sort of in and out of prison or feeling like living in neighborhoods where I felt like were heavily policed, you know? And so there was just constantly this feeling of someone is watching over you, someone's sort of telling you where you can and can't go or where you should be. And that for me was something that I vowed I wouldn't allow to happen. And I think access to education and money were the ways that I was going to kind of course correct that for myself.
Oh, so it was a big motivator as the, like, almost, this is my ticket to kind of establish more control,
right,
for lack of a better way of saying. Okay.
Right.
So as you transition from conservatories and that type of training into the legal field, what were those first few jobs like fresh out of law school, both in terms of how you operated in those jobs, because that's going to be a big part of what we talk about in part two, but also how did you choose the jobs that were right for you fresh out?
Yeah, I mean, so I went to, you know, a top 10 law school. And so, you know, that part of that training is you go to a big law firm usually, right? So I went to a big law firm right after law school. And so that job was, I wouldn't say selected for me, I mean, but all of the firms are kind of the same, right? So I ultimately chose the law firm I went to because they were like a top entertainment law firm. And at the time, my focus and passion was being an entertainment lawyer, right? So I moved to LA and took that gig. Maybe 2 years in, I decided that it wasn't really for me. I mean, things like billable hours. And again, people sort of counting your minutes and telling you like how much time you've got to bill. Like, you know, there's thematically, I don't love that. Like, and so I thought, okay, but I probably got to stick this out for 3 or 4 years because in the legal profession, you know, going to a law firm is sort of a rite of passage. It's like it's a form of like hazing. And there's people assume certain things about your ability if you can cut it at, you know, a big law firm, right? So I sort of made myself stay for longer than I wanted to. And that was fine. I've always had this ability to suspend or like delay gratification, understanding that this step may be a means to an end. It doesn't necessarily need to be the end itself. And so that was fine. And then the next thing I did was I quit and decided I was going to start my own entertainment law firm and consulting agency. And that was, you know, I thought I can do what these partners are doing at this firm, but I can also be doing it for, you know, brown and black people, for artists, you know, for people who didn't have the resources to pay, you know, big law firm fees. And so I did that. And that was a really fun experience. And I did that for about 3 years. And then a big startup came by and he said, hey, I was actually negotiating a license agreement for my client at my own firm with this company, right? This company wanted to license something that a client of mine had created. And so anyway, we go through that process and the deal gets closed. And maybe about 2 weeks later, they reached out to me saying, hey, we're really building out this business. We wondered, you know, we'd like the way you, you know, manage this, you know, negotiation and so on and so forth. Would you be interested in coming and heading up business and legal affairs for us? And, you know, so that was a tough decision because I was like, I'm giving up this freedom that I really like. But also it was clear to me again that while this was, I was able to do this, I was still super young in my legal career. And I was thinking about what is the narrative of my career going to be? And as technology and apps and e-commerce started to really take off, I thought this may be a good space for me to be like a subject matter expert in. And so I took the gig. And then I moved overseas to be the general counsel for the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi for a while. And I worked at a big online travel company that most of us have probably used. And today I'm at the GC of a tech and content company in the US.
So one thread that I have to say so that you don't have to say it is, you know, I said that there was a reason at the beginning of this episode that I would choose you to kind of tell people how to navigate their career. I would just ask the audience to just trust my expertise that, you know, work with a lot of successful people. You need to be listening to what this person is saying because I wouldn't expect you to say all of the places where you've worked, but just audience, trust me, it's an impressive list. So as you have gone through those different things, because I hear so many things just in terms of managing finances. I hear going from W-2 billable hours to owning my own firm to negotiating to join another firm. And One of the threads that you and I have discussed is like this duality of building expertise in your professional life and it being hard to turn that off in your personal life, right? Like I'm an expert over here. And I have to make myself look like an expert, right? I can't show any level of lack of knowledge or anything like that. And then over here, There's something that it may be difficult for me or I'm trying to learn. So With those first few jobs, what was it like? Income is increasing based on what you're describing. You're probably earning more than most people with whom you grew up. What was it like for those first few jobs managing finances?
You know, great question. You know, I think our parents do the best that they can, right? But I definitely, you know, didn't understand, you know, what it meant to like have money, right? And how to manage that. And so my sole goal, you know, again, going back to like, you know, 9-year-old me was, you know, amassing the money, right? Like once I have the money, everything will be fine. Because again, I saw lots of people kind of being stuck in situations because they, in my mind, they didn't have, you know, options. So the shift over to like having money, I think in the moment I didn't feel this, but when I look back, I think I was really operating out of like survival and lack, even when I was not really surviving, I was thriving, and there was some level of abundance, at least for me, right? But my mindset had not shifted in that way. And so, you know, I would be like hoarding money and like having it in a bank account, but then like not, you know, investing it or not doing things with the money that like make me happy, you know, always waiting for that like, you know, proverbial, you know, rainy day, right? And so it was important for me to start thinking about, okay, that's not an area I'm strong in, right? So I can do certain things, like I can get the job to get me the income, right? But now who's gonna, like, how do I make sure that that money is working for me, that I'm working smarter and not harder? And, you know, in steps like, you and our relationship, right? Our business relationship where you're really helping me, you know, navigate some of those areas where I'm still operating, I think, out of fear or out of some sort of trauma response.
Trauma response is such a powerful term. We reference this book, Mind Over Money, on this podcast frequently, where it talks about the things that you see in your adolescence when it comes to money. It doesn't matter, unless there's like a major experience in adulthood, it is so hard to shake those early feelings from adolescence when it comes to how you deal with money. And you and I have talked about early in your career, there was like a certain objective with the roles that you were taking on. And now you have positioned yourself where you have earned the right to be a little more flexible in what you're looking for. Yeah. Can you tell me how your thought process and feelings about the roles you choose have evolved over time?
Yeah. I mean, I would think that at early in my life or my career, the roles chose me, right? I felt like these were things I felt like I had to do, right? So it was, when I say that, like the law firm, I knew I was going to go to a law firm. So it was just a matter of like, which one of the top X law firms are you going to go to? That didn't feel particularly like creative on my part. It was just like, this is something that kind of I just have to do, right? And then I think when I started, one of the most valuable things about running my own law firm was that it taught me how much I really liked autonomy, how much I really liked flexibility and freedom, how much I liked a diverse kind of client base. I like solving problems. I like rolling up my sleeve. Like, it taught me a lot about, okay, these are the things that I actually like, and how can you do those things and, you know, keep the lights on. Today, you know, and with each gig, I try to make sure that the next gig that I take on moves the ball forward for me. It gives me something or some things that I did not have before. And it does not sacrifice, or I don't have to sacrifice my freedom and flexibility or my autonomy, right? So I'm, you know, in these gigs, I'm asking questions about, you know, what are your thoughts on sort of diversity, equity, and inclusion? I am having conversations about, you know, what other forms of, like, in addition to like PTO, you know, what other kinds of flexible kind of, you know, work, vacation kind of, you know, pay do you have? Like, what are those programs? You know, are you requiring people to come into the office? You know, when are people normally going home at the end of the day? You know, when are they getting in the office? Like, really trying to understand, I guess I would call it the culture of the company. And, you know, it takes a while to get there, I guess. And maybe some people do this from the very beginning. I didn't feel like I had the privilege of thinking about culture. I don't even know that I understood what culture meant until I think I had some not so great experiences with company cultures. But I think today I focus more on how is this company going to fit into my life? How is this job going to fit into my life? And so now I would say that while I'm still ambitious and driven, I'm definitely trying to find systems and processes and opportunities that allow me to work smarter, but not harder.
This is the New Money, New Problems podcast, a show for successful professionals searching for the tools they need to navigate financial opportunities and obstacles they've never seen. We'll be right back.
Are you wondering what new money problems you might be overlooking in your financial life? If so, we've got great news. We've crafted the New Money, New Problems Gap Finder to identify potential weaknesses in your finances in areas ranging from budgeting, investments, insurance, and even the threat your extended family's finances could pose to your household. Please head to newmoneynewproblems.com/gapfinder to complete it today. Again, that's newmoneynewproblems.com/gapfinder to take the assessment.
You're listening to the New Money, New Problems podcast. Subscribe now at newmoneynewproblems.com. Welcome back.
Tell us a little bit about the role you serve now, and even, you know, if you're willing, how that kind of check the boxes of this helps move the ball forward for me.
Yeah. So I'm the general counsel for a global tech company that focuses on like AI and content creation. So I'm responsible for everything sort of legal that comes through the door, from legal strategies to M&A, you know, negotiating contracts, advising on product development, thinking about global expansions into like new markets, you name it, that, you know, me and my team are responsible for that. And that's exciting for me. And why this gig checked the boxes for me is that I do like being, the company is not a startup per se, but it has like a startup feel. And so I like companies that are not so bureaucratic. So I don't join at the time when they're so bureaucratic or where things are so settled, like systems are so settled that I don't have the opportunity to influence the culture in a meaningful way. And so finding companies in this kind of growth stage, I think has, you know, checked that box for me. The flexibility is important. I get to, you know, work remotely and, you know, travel to the various offices, you know, as needed. I think, you know, comp, you know, I was able, you know, negotiating, you know, that's important. And then some of the perks, you know, that we've talked about, like, you know, like extended kind of PTO that's more than, you know, what typical companies give. You know, there's equity, there's, you know, there are all these other kind of perks that are like, in addition to, you know, kind of the day to day, these are some things that are going to kind of help keep moving the ball forward in terms of my dreams of building wealth while also making sure that I'm in a role that I can show up as my like psychological, like full self.
Right. You know? Right. Well, as we build towards the second part of our time together, I am interested to know, you talked about understanding the areas where you're talented, that I can find the role that pays me enough to do what I need to do. And here are the areas where I might need some help. Can you tell me about some of like the complexities that you've navigated where you are an expert in your field while also feeling like there are some areas where you may need some help?
Yeah, sure. I mean, particularly in the industries that I've been in have all been, you know, fast moving, you know, tech driven, media driven companies. So things are moving constantly, right? Yeah. And the role of the lawyer is to sort of answer the questions when it comes, right? From the product team, from the engineering team, from the business teams. And sometimes, you know, I'll say I'm the general counsel, right? I know a little bit about a lot, you know, and then I know I'm a SME or subject matter expert in certain areas, but there may be some things, and there are some things, which is what I love about roles like this, that I just don't know. Right? I don't understand the latest technology, or I may understand it conceptually, but I've not coded anything or created anything to sort of understand the user experience or the flow. And so I find that to be a challenge, but a welcome challenge. So, and to overcome that and to mitigate that, I, in this role, for example, you know, I've got weekly one-on-one meetings with the head of product, with the head of engineering. I have them sort of walk me through, you know, product development plans, you know, very early on. I've taken some like LinkedIn learning and like other courses to sort of just ramp up to be able to at least speak the same language as, you know, the engineers and the tech people. So that's one of those areas where it's like, God, I'm really, you know, an expert over here, but I really don't know anything about like open sourcing right now, right? Or something like that, right? And sort of figuring that out. And I think another challenge is finding the time to upskill, right? And thinking more strategically. Sometimes you can just be focused on like putting out fires, you know? So one of the things that I try to do is build in time in my day where I'm only thinking about things in a strategic way, or I'm thinking about sort of more broadly, what are some of the things we can be doing to drive efficiency, to meet goals, these kinds of things, right? But I carve out that time in my day, because if I don't, I can be pulled into a million emails, meetings, Slacks, you know, you name it. And so finding that balance is a challenge, because I want to be everywhere. And in some ways, that upskilling felt like to me, like, not something I should be doing on company times in some ways, but I'm like, no, you're bringing a new thing to me. Like, I need the ability to kind of take the time to think through how we can best roll this thing out, right? So, and being unapologetic for that. But I've gotten better at that, but that was a challenge. I think delegation's tough, right, for me, or has been tough for me, because I think I want to, and this is a trauma response, right? I think as a child, I realized that, like, the moments where I was in control, I was less likely to be disappointed or hurt or whatever the feelings are. And I think that just kind of follows with you in your adult life. But I've been working. I took a course on, like, delegating effectively. Like, I lean into the areas where I need some support, and which wasn't always the case. And so I'm finding that I'm building systems to delegate more appropriately, asking for the headcount that I need to do the job. But that's always a balance. And because I think the backdrop of all of that is this kind of imposter syndrome that I think in my heart of hearts, I don't necessarily feel, but I think in some moments, especially in moments where I'm not particularly confident about something that I'm doing, or the environment doesn't make me feel as comfortable, whatever those things are, then I think some of these thoughts of you're a black face in white space, for example, and should you be here? And then you've got to check yourself and be like, here are the receipts. You ask along here. But that is still something that I struggle with from time to time.
Well, you're touching on some of them, going even further into that thread, knowing what you know now, when you look at a young or a minority professional who's trying to advance their career, what are some of the major mistakes that you see them making?
Yeah, and I think everyone's got their journey, right? And I I think that there are opportunities, and sometimes you've got to go through to get to. So I don't know, that I characterize them as mistakes per se, but the opportunities for alternative approaches that I've seen are not mapping out a plan, right? I think it's just kind of going along to get along, or going through the motions. Like, I'm going to go to this school, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this that in and of itself kind of sounds like a plan, but it's like that's been imposed on you, and not kind of thinking about what you want and mapping out a plan to get you there, right? And again, some of that is a privilege, right? Some of that is, did you have family or anyone who could teach you those things? But I think that's taking the time to map out the plan, not asking for help, right? For some of the same reasons I mentioned above or earlier, asking for help might have been seen as weakness, right? But I think it's important to ask for help. It's important to find mentors who can guide you on that path. So I think that's important, that maybe, there's an opportunity to do more of that. Also, not understanding the value of building relationships, right? And guarding your reputation around, so being on, going on panels and speaking engagements, or putting yourself out there as an expert, or going to these trade organization conferences, these kinds of things, this is where people are making deals. This is where people are meeting you in a more kind of relaxed setting. So you're building more of a personal relationship. And I think this is where a lot of that kind of reputation building and business relationship building happens. So I would think people should do more of that. I think going back to school in some form, I don't necessarily mean going full time, but upskilling yourself and making that a part of something that you do constantly. I try to take at least one certificate type program every year in a field that, or an area where I don't feel like I have a ton of expertise, but that I think it would be useful in my job, right? And then I would think, there's an opportunity, but this goes back to kind of making the plan. There's an opportunity for us to kind of think out of the box more, right? And kind of think about what are the different ways, to get to where you need to be. So for example, I felt like being a Black person in America, you know, I was at 33 years old, I felt like I wasn't always getting the same opportunities that like my counterparts might have gotten, my white counterparts might have gotten. And I never understood that because it was just like, well, you know, I've got the same pedigree or better, or I've got whatever the things are. And so one of the things I researched was, well, what about working, truly working internationally, you know? And the universe has always been conspiring in my favor, because as I started to think about that, this opportunity to be the general counsel in the UAE came up. And it was a job that would be the equivalent of being the GC for like a Disney or a Netflix or something at like 33 years old, which just was not going to be happening. Right? But it gave me, I mean, it could happen. But it gave me that access. It gave me the confidence. I was in a space where the color of my skin was not a limitation. And so I say that all to say, like, also thinking through, where are there places, are there opportunities or other places that you can explore to help get you to a place sooner? And I would say that sometimes I think that the hardest place to grow is where you're planted, right? And so sometimes you may be in a place and you're trying to thrive and do all of those things in that place, and either the opportunities aren't there, people remember the older version of you and, you know, aren't giving you the benefit of the doubt to sort of explore new things, whatever the things are, you're kind of planted and rooted there. And so sometimes it's hard to grow there, and sometimes you just gotta, you know, uproot and try something new, right? And I think that was one of the best decisions I've made in my life, because after, you know, 6 years of doing that and coming back to the US, I've always then had the jobs that I thought I should have been having, you know, prior to this job in the Middle East. So I think take risks and think outside of the box.
It's kind of an example of the saying, a prophet in his own land is without honor, right? Like, right, you will right. always see me as this, regardless of what I've done to elevate myself.
100%.
Yeah, so that's powerful. Well, last question I have for you before we go into part two. With all that you've done, there's so much ahead of you. Any things you look back on with regret, or is it all just part of the journey?
Yeah, I think in general, it's all a part of the journey. Like, I try to like enjoy the ride, right? And I, even in this conversation, like I try to say, like, maybe it's not a mistake, there was an opportunity to do something different, you know, differently. But what I love about the journey and the way that I think making the opportunities or mistakes not be in vain is thinking through, how do I learn from that and not make that same mistake again, right? I think there's a world where I'm like, you can make a new mistake every day, you know, but try not to make, you know, the same one twice. And so that's kind of how I look at my journey. But one thing I think I would say that I wish I would have focused on earlier was like my peace and my mental health, right? Like, understanding that work has its place, right? But that you've got to be listening to your body. You've got to be making sure that you are feeling like emotionally and, you know, psychologically safe. And those kinds of things are not things that I thought about earlier in my career. And I think it impacted some of my like career decisions, but also my like personal life decisions, right? Because I was not focused on, you know, yeah, like my mental health and making sure that I was like protecting my peace and protecting my safe space. So I would think that as people continue to evolve in their careers, whether they're early on or later in the game, I think it's really important to kind of prioritize like self, you know, physical health, mental health, emotional health. And that's something I would have done differently.
Well, those are wise words from a wise person. We're going to keep this wisdom flowing in part two. So Danny Andrews, I thank you for being a guest on the New Money, New Problems podcast, and I will talk to you again very soon.
Okay. Take care. Thank you for having me.
From New Money, New Problems, this was the New Money, New Problems podcast.
a show for successful professionals searching for the tools they need to navigate financial opportunities and obstacles they've never seen.